Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to What's Left of America following that debate. And I really did enjoy it. It's affected me deeply. So from here on out, whenever I'm talking, JR, just keep cutting in. And when you talk, I'm going to keep cutting in. And I think that's how democracy should function. JR Jackson, how's it going?
It's going.
No, he's lying. No. Anyway, sorry. How have you been? It's been a bit.
It's been a bit. It's going. I'm not sure which direction it's going. I'm kind of sure which direction it's going.
Bad. This direction.
We're circling right now. We're just talking for a second about the debate before we jumped on, and I was just saying how last week we mentioned how nothing Donald Trump does is surprising anymore. And if you predict he's never going to go past this point, whatever point you want to come up with, he will go past it. And that last night was one of those points. And I think I was only 10% surprised because I was really pushing that whole narrative of there's nothing you can be surprised by him anymore. But I'm even mad at myself for letting 10% of me be surprised by his behavior last night. I guess we'll put it that way.
Yeah. We're gonna go through some specifics and then we'll do a bit more wrap up. Partially because we did live coverage yesterday, but we couldn't talk during the debate because Biden couldn't. Why should we? And then I was on with Cenk, so I didn't really talk much. So anyway, so I'm gonna give my overall reaction soon. I did want to let everyone know that as we talked about on the coverage last night, Shop TYT has a new shirt, the Will You Shut Up Man shirt in reference to Joe Biden's line to Donald Trump. That's available at shoptyt.com. You can use code BABY to get 15% off your apparel. It's a great shirt. It's also a great demonstration of how fast we can get those products out the door when we're properly motivated to do so, and how long it takes when we're not. Anyway, look, we got a lot that we're gonna be talking about over the course of this episode, but I also wanted to give you an early heads up of next episode, because tomorrow on the Damage Report, we have the epic return of Jason Carter, who's gonna be back on the program. You can follow him in advance at JJC Forever, and we're gonna be doing, God only knows what'll be in the news by then, but Jason and I always have fun, so definitely look forward to that. If you're watching, as many of you are, please hit the like button, share the stream, do whatever it is. I don't know, there's icons between your chat box and the screen. Just start hitting them randomly and see what happens. It usually works out. Sometimes on some of the websites that like Ted Cruz goes to, those buttons you want to be more careful with, because it might share things that you're watching that you don't want everyone to know about. But in this case, I think you'll be okay. And with that, why don't we just jump into it, JR? We've got so much to get.
You're right.
Let's do it. Okay. The debate was a mess, but I want to focus on some of the scariest portions of it. And I don't just mean the one that you think I'm going to go to. We're going to get to that. But first, I want to go to this, a line that I feel like is getting ignored because of the white supremacist stuff that came a little bit later. Take a look at this about what should happen on Election Day.
To stay calm during this extended period, not to engage in any civil unrest, and will you pledge tonight that you will not declare victory until the election has been independently certified? President Trump,
you go first. I'm urging my supporters to go into the polls and watch very carefully, because that's what has to happen. I am urging them to do it. I'm urging my people. I hope it's going to be a fair election. If it's a fair election, I am 100% on board. But if I see tens of thousands of ballots being manipulated, I can't go along with that. And I'll tell you what, from a common sense,
does that mean you're going to tell your people to take to the street?
It means you have a fraudulent election. You're sending out 80 million ballots. They're not equipped to, these people aren't equipped to handle it. Number one. Number two, they cheat.
Okay. So that was a couple of things in one little section that he specifically told the thugs and goons that follow him to go and intimidate voters. And they're already doing that, by the way, way in advance of the election. They're trying to break into like the offices where some of the prep is being done for elections. And he thinks that's great. And then also, if there's tens of thousands of votes manipulated, and what does that mean? How would he determine that? By his whim, we have to imagine, he can't go along with the election. Well, he's already saying they're being manipulated. He said at the debate they're being manipulated. So I guess he already can't go along with it. So get ready for all of that. None of this should come as a surprise. I'm sure it doesn't to JR. I'm sure it doesn't to the audience. It's just a reminder that this is how the election is going to be run.
Yeah, he's been giving us these signals for months now about how he's going to approach the election. And literally, I mean, since 16, when he said he wouldn't accept those results either, except now he's dug in deeper and there's more things on his record. There's more corruption that has been exposed throughout his entire presidency. So there's more on the line this time. So he's even more committed to this not accepting of any of the results. And John, this is why the Damage Report is the leading morning show on the TYT network. It beats all the rest of the morning shows on the network, because you'll go through these to these parts of the debate that were very, like, they were specifically horrific, but you know, obviously, and I think with good reason, the refusal to accept or to condemn white supremacy definitely took the night as far as the most disgusting line. But this was overlooked in real time. As after he went through that, by the way, I saw the edits that went through that. He spoke on this for a solid minute about how he wants his foot soldiers to take to the streets and watch the polls. Let's switch those two words around. Poll watchers, you mean, right? So, because the thing we do when we have people that are associated with a specific party or a specific candidate go to specific polling locations where you consider people are voting fraudulently, or maybe people you just don't want to vote. Which kind of people have those been in American history? Watch them, intimidate them, stand there, because you know Trump supporters, you know, they show up there with shirts and ties and pamphlets to hand out to people, which also you're not supposed to do. But they'll show up there with guns. And they'll be there chanting, and they'll scowl, and then they'll look down at people. So these are all the things that they're trying to do to intimidate voters. Again, something else that is not allowed in this country. But as a moderator who is, apparently has been covering politics for all these years, his father is well renowned for it too. And Joe Biden, who's been in politics for 50 years, neither one of them said, "What did you just say, Mr. Trump? What did you just say? You're urging seven different times in a sentence." Your supporters to go out and take to the streets. Well, Chris Watts did in his defense, did say, are you telling them to take to the streets? But that was never heard. He should have asked him again. Are you telling them to take to the streets, go to polling locations and watch people vote to determine that they're doing things the right way? And if you see that there's all these ballots getting tossed and mishandled, you're gonna do something about it. How would you see it? Ask, like, all we need is three specific questions, because he just throws such loads of garbage out there that you have to say, wait, how are you gonna determine that all these things have been done wrong? You said, if you see it, how would you see it? Are you gonna monitor the election? Are you looking at votes, Mr. President? Which one, like, we need to ask these questions, because everything that he just set up and said he's gonna do is blatantly, obviously illegal and anti-American and definitely against our voting process.
Yeah, I agree and disagree. So I'm glad that he asked the questions that he did and got Trump to say this stuff, because I think it's important for everyone to know where Trump stands on this. Getting more into the specifics of what Donald Trump will do, you know, how he'll determine if it's fraudulent, I don't actually think that there's much of a point to that, because it's all nonsense, all of it. Like, what he's just—it's just going to give him time to focus more of the debate on spreading conspiracy theories that you can't trust the vote, which I feel like is what he wants to do. I want the people to be warned that he's not going to accept the results. And then I think we need to prep for that. That's the important thing. I don't know what more he really would have revealed. And I was a little bit frustrated, honestly, with the way Chris Wallace kept sort of implying, what are you going to do about it? I get if he means, like, are you going to tell your supporters to calm down and accept the results? That's one thing. But I don't like the framing that it's up to Donald Trump to do anything about it. He doesn't get to decide what votes we count and what votes we don't count. The Supreme Court isn't supposed to decide. They did in 2000. That's not supposed to be the way it is. It's supposed to be we all vote, and the one who gets more votes is supposed to win. So I didn't really love that framing, but it's important for people to know that. And yeah, we're gonna get to other scary stuff, but this is pretty dark.
Small last point on this for me then. If you ask him these questions, he has to answer them, or he has to not answer them, and then he's put on record saying he has no details behind all the craziness that he's throwing out there. Because if you just let him steamroll and throw all these things out there, it becomes common knowledge in a way. It's false, but then now him calling for poll watchers, specifically from his supporters, to go and watch polls and intimidate people, if it's not challenged to say, do you know what you just said? If we just let him say it, then people start going, yeah, poll watching is a normal thing. It's supposed to happen in this country because we buy into craziness. If nobody says, hey, in case we forgot what country we like to say we are, poll watching and poll intimidation are in fact illegal in this country. It's not supposed to happen. Now, we know the Republican Party's been pushing for those guidelines to be taken down and just disregard them from now on, like they do with everything else with the voting rights. But it just needs to be pointed out what he just said, because he says so much, people just kind of accept it.
Yeah, and you know, the obvious response everybody says, what would you think if you saw a president doing this in literally any other country? What would you think about that? Telling his, you know, lunatic gun wielding militia members to go and intimidate people. What would you think about it?
It's a terrorist organization. We'll get to that soon.
Yeah, and really fast, just to mention a few other things, because again, I get that like we're gonna transition soon to the big thing, but all of this incredibly important. The fact that multiple times asked about climate change, he says, I want the cleanest water. That's horrifying to me. The fact that, and I can't believe nobody's talking about this one, Joe Biden said that between now and the end of the year, it's estimated that we'll lose 100 to 200,000 additional people. That's the belief about how this thing might play out. If we just all wear masks, we could cut that in half, okay? We can save 100,000 people. That's what Joe Biden said. And Trump began screaming, no, it could do the opposite. It could do the opposite. And there was no follow up. There's no headlines that the president appears to be implying that mask wearing could kill 100,000 extra people between now and the end of the year. Maybe that's not what he means. His brain is just, as I've said before, it's a big rolled up ball of belly button lint. I don't know what he actually meant, but that seems like the fairest reading of what he said, among all the other lies about the pandemic. The fact that he was still saying, I think masks are fine, he said. He implied that if Joe Biden had been president, 2 million people would have lied, because he's grasped onto this number that is supposed to be the estimate for how many people would have died if the government had literally not even known that the pandemic was happening. He's implying that that's the standard that he should be held against. The whole thing was a horror show from top to bottom, as everyone seems to acknowledge.
Yeah, it's seen that. I'm ready to go to the next.
Okay, well, why don't we move on to the next?
Done with this.
Yeah. I don't know why anyone would have assumed that Donald Trump would have condemned white supremacy last night, but why not give him an opportunity to? And so Chris Wallace did, and this is what Donald Trump said.
We criticized the vice president for not specifically calling out Antifa and other left-wing extremist groups. But are you willing tonight to condemn white supremacists and militia groups and to say that they need to stand down and not add to the violence in a number of these cities, as we saw in Kenosha and as we've seen in Portland?
Sure,
are you
I'm
prepared
to
specifically
that,
do it?
Well, I would say almost everything I see is from the left wing, not from the right wing.
So what are you saying?
I'm willing to do anything. I want to see peace.
Then do it, sir.
Say it. You want to call them? What do you want to call them? Give me a name.
White supremacists and right
wing. Who would you like me to condemn?
White supremacists and right wing.
Proud Boys. Stand back and stand by, but I'll tell you what. Somebody's got to do something about Antifa and the left, because this is not a right wing problem. This is a left wing. This is a left wing problem.
Okay, so look, that's the big line from the debate. I would say that I'm glad that people are focusing on it, but I feel like they're focusing on a very specific bit of it and not the rest of the context that makes it even more horrifying. But JR, I've already talked about this on our coverage last night. When you saw that, what were your thoughts?
Again, it was a move on moment afterwards. There wasn't an extra 2 minutes per candidate put up there to ask them. So we've been taking on a tangent here, a very important one. But the President of the United States, we just specifically asked him to condemn white supremacy, and he openly and blatantly absolutely did not. Asked us which group to even, which words to use, because you know he's so unfamiliar with white supremacists in this country. So so he moves on to just stand back and stand by. We know those are the terms that were used. And who celebrated about it? The Proud Boys did. They celebrated about the fact that he's endorsed them, which he's done before. White supremacists have celebrated before when Donald Trump said they're good people. Donald Trump has said many times things that white supremacists and retweeted and reiterated and mouthpieced for these folks throughout his presidency, before his presidency. The guy's a well-known white supremacist, and his defense to it is, no, I'm not, as he does it. So it's no more surprise. I said tons about it last night too, because I was live tweeting. But it's the response to the way this guy conducts himself is honestly the appalling part. It's too easy to just ask him, what did you just say? Would you like to say that again? Just put him on record, be silent, let him say it some more. Yeah, we know he's been interrupting all night. We know he's been outrageously annoying. But now we have a point where we need him to keep talking, because he's dug himself in his hole. And then we need to see if his supporters are continuing to support him through this. And as we've seen today, they have. They've turned reality on its head. And again, that's nothing to be surprised about either. The usefulness of this debate, I can't, if I could put it below 0%, I could, but that doesn't make much sense. It was zero help from this debate. There was nothing anyone learned from it. No voters were swayed by it. Nobody that supported him suddenly thought they didn't want to support him. And nobody that didn't support him suddenly said, oh, President really conduct himself great. I think I've just switched sides. None of that happened tonight, last night.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, it was everything. You know, we know it is that everybody that we said, you know, at the time, like all the analysis is true. It's horrifying. The president had a chance to condemn literal white supremacy, not like just some specific group where they would try to make the case that it's not a really accurate label. Like Chris Wall said, white supremacy, and he couldn't do it or wouldn't do it. He could have, clearly, he could have just said, yeah, white supremacy is the worst. It wouldn't have actually hurt him with his base. His base would have been fine. They would have understood that he was lying to Chris Wallace.
Absolutely.
And even though that's the case, he didn't do it. So what did we get? We get him saying, almost everything I see is from the left wing. Well, yeah, of course, you watch Fox News all day and you occasionally read Breitbart. That's about it. Of course, you have a 100% inaccurate view of what's going on. Forget what the FBI says about the actual violence. Forget about who's actually killing people, including cops. Forget all about that. It's just whatever Tucker Carlson says it is. So we get that. And then we get the stand down and stand by line, which isn't just horrifying on the merits that he's effectively telling this group of thugs to stand by for later. But it was also that the entire thing was a sarcastic joke that he was doing. That was Trump's, oh yeah, stand by, stand down line. Like even the specifics that didn't condemn them was a joke to him. He thinks the whole thing is funny, the president who has inspired so many acts of violence from this group. And also the fact the stand down and stand by is horrifying. I get that people are focusing on that. I honestly think that the line that came immediately after that is far worse when he says, sure, stand down, stand by, but somebody has to do something about Antifa. Absolutely. That is a call to action, to do something about this group that isn't a group, that doesn't have a membership, but just go out and do something after all. And it reminds me of a very specific thing that we saw recently, which was every right winger's reaction to Kyle Rittenhouse murdering multiple protesters was, oh yeah, something, 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 but he felt he had to do something. Why is it that the country has come to the point where a teenager has to get a gun and do something? It always transitions to the need is out there for someone to pick up a gun and do something about it. And that is what the president of the United States did on the international stage there at the debate, telling them, Somebody has to do something about Antifa, and we know what that something is. It's murdering protesters. That's all it is.
And I get the feeling that they got that message and they let us know.
Yeah, I get that feeling too.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
When Donald Trump told white supremacists around the country to stand down and stand by, they were apparently listening and they apparently didn't mind what he said. Ben Collins, reporter, said a meme going around Proud Boys groups tonight, a photo of Kyle Rittenhouse, the Kenosha shooter, along with the president's words from last night, "stand back and stand by." So they think, well, because clearly Kyle Rittenhouse is a living martyr. He's the best guy ever. They've all agreed on that basically at this point, in case you haven't been following this. That's what it is. It's, you know, stand by, because we might need some more Kyle Rittenhouses. The leader of the Proud Boys, Joe Biggs, wrote on Parler, "Trump basically said to go F them up. This makes me so happy." So that's good. And let's see, they instantly made a logo out of it, showing stand back, stand by. And so if you were wondering how they interpreted it, it's fairly clear that they got the message Donald Trump wanted them to get.
That should be the question that's asked of every Republican, conservative, politician, pundit, anybody who dares stick their face in front of a camera, in front of a microphone, to say anything about anything. You want to come talk about COVID-19? You want to come talk about the economy? You want to talk about the election in general? Every time you stick your head out to speak about it, you want to talk about relief funds maybe? Do anything you stick your head out for, the question should be asked immediately. Do you support Donald Trump and his white supremacy? Do you support Donald Trump and his support for the Proud Boys? Do you support what Donald Trump said about having the Proud Boys stand by? What do you think Donald Trump was telling the Proud Boys to stand by for? And every time they say he didn't mean it, every time they say he condemned them, say, the Proud Boys don't think so. You think the Proud Boys got the message wrong? Hey, the Proud Boys are the ones that were brought up, and they said that it's exactly what they wanted. Do you agree with the Proud Boys? Are the Proud Boys a bunch of liars? Do you hate the Proud Boys, or do you love the Proud Boys? Just flood them with all these very simple questions, because a non-answer is an acceptance of what's been going on here. And they're always let off the hook. Every time, ask them every time until they answer the question. You know, I disagree with the president. White supremacy is a scourge on our nation. Proud Boys are part of that. They're a terrorist organization, and I want nothing to do with them. And until Donald Trump does the same thing, I want nothing to do with him. If they can't say that, they're on board for all this. They've always been on board for all this. Donald Trump is just the one that's too stupid to not say it quietly like they've been saying it for 30, 40 years. So since he can't say it quietly, maybe you should say it out loud, or stay quiet and go with your boy. Everybody needs to be put on notice that if you're part of Donald Trump's party, because we've got plenty of quote unquote rhinos that he likes to call them that aren't a part of his BS anymore. If you're not one of the rhinos, that means you're one of the white supremacists. Choose, because your president is one who's whittled this down to one choice or another. Which side are you on?
Yeah, 100%. And you know, the only other thing I want to say about this, just because you know we've talked about this so many times, we cannot rule out the possibility that on any given day, any given week, new people start paying attention to American politics. And so we talk about things for those new people. But look, you can keep asking him what he thinks about white supremacy. We already know what he thinks about white supremacy. We already know what he thinks about all of this. It's just they add it to the long list of topics that we already know. We know, and we more importantly know what the effect is going to be. He is going to continually instigate violence, race-based violence, and also political-based violence. He's gonna do that while making sure that the FBI, all of those groups, don't actually do any serious investigations of how horrible of a threat these groups are. And until we get Donald Trump out and get someone reasonable in charge of the FBI and get some group together that's actually gonna do something about this, it's gonna get worse. And asking him questions, I guess, might make it clear to people where he stands, but it doesn't have anything to do with stopping the problem, okay? Because the problem's here, it's getting worse literally every year. And if we get four more years of him, I mean, you know where this is going. You know where this is going. Now, really fast, I do wanna give you some of the responses to that particular line. I'd like to do this on so many different parts of the debate, but we unfortunately can't do that. So we'll transition to that now. As the media was sort of scrambling to come to grips with Donald Trump telling white supremacists to stand by during the election, Rick Santorum, which a major news network decided should be one of the commentators on the debate, had this to say about Chris Wallace asking Trump that question. And it is interesting because it's a defense of Trump, sort of, but it also reveals quite a bit about the Republican base.
Oh, a lot to Chris Wallace, because Chris Wallace asked those two questions, not Joe Biden. It was Chris Wallace who asked those two questions.
He asked
him for a reason, because he asked two questions where he was asking the president to do something that he knows the president doesn't like to do.
Which is
say something bad about people who support him, right?
What, declining violence?
Talking about
the white supremacists.
Yeah, the white supremacists, number one. And number two, asking a question about whether he would, he knows the president doesn't think this election's fair.
Okay, so just to be clear, Rick Santorum there is saying that Trump cares more about not offending white supremacists than about reassuring Americans that he doesn't support a second civil war of some kind. And he also very clearly admits there that if you're a white supremacist, you support Donald Trump. It doesn't seem to bother Rick Santorum very much, JR. It's just like, oh yeah, no, of course, if you're a white supremacist and you believe that white people should dominate American society, well, you're clearly gonna love Donald Trump. It's really mean of Chris Wallace to sort of point that out and put Donald Trump in such an awkward position.
Yeah, well, Rick Santorum was one of the Republicans that I was referring to previously in office that would groom white supremacists, that would accept him without blatantly saying it. You know, there's a nice way of going about it, and you go, and he tried there, even in pointing out why Trump didn't say it. He goes, well, Donald Trump has a problem saying anything bad about his supporters. So if you're gonna let that just slide from there, he would allow you to think that Donald Trump doesn't like upsetting his base, because every politician doesn't like upsetting their base. That's the most normal thing in the world. He just doesn't want to say anything bad about his supporters. But previous to this these years of Trump years, CNN would have allowed Rick Santorum to get away with that. And they would have said, yeah, you're right, he doesn't. And they wouldn't have pointed out, hey, but he's talking about white supremacists here, because Trump is blatantly saying it. So now you have to ask the question. Now, if he doesn't blatantly say it, Rick Santorum can go ahead and go with the dog whistle and say, well, he just doesn't like upsetting his supporters. And then everyone else would follow along and say, yeah, it's just his supporters that he doesn't want to upset. His supporters are white supremacists, but now they have to say it. And then Rick Santorum has to accidentally go, yeah, you're right, the white supremacists, yeah, the white supremacists. He kind of had to throw that in there at the end when he really didn't want to, because that looks and sounds way too bad. But Rick Santorum is the same guy the rest of these guys are. Hey, let's make sure we keep the white supremacists on our side and motivated without saying it.
100%. And it's pretty amazing to have Donald Trump be given the easiest question that's ever been given to someone in a presidential debate and whiff it. And in response to that, Rick Santorum is given the easiest job in political commentary to point out that that's awful. That's all it takes. But no, he had to be defensive because he's brought on there to defend Donald Trump, which makes him, in this case, as bad as Donald Trump. Because if you're okay with Trump not condemning white supremacy, you're really not that opposed to white supremacy, honestly. It doesn't really seem to bother you that much. You're a little bit more concerned about the decorum of the debate moderator at the worst, most embarrassing debate in American history. So that's Rick Santorum. But let's turn to someone a little bit more important, a show that's a little bit more important now. Fox and Friends is the most important political news show in the world because they have an audience that I don't really care about, except that it includes Donald Trump. That makes them super important. So what did they think of Trump not condemning white supremacy? Kilmeade is gonna be a bit defensive about it, and he's gonna criticize Joe Biden, but he actually seems a little bit bothered by it.
And if you're going to say that President Trump was rude, there was only one person who called the other one a clown, a racist, the worst president ever, and told to shut up. And that was Joe Biden on Donald Trump. But Donald Trump blew the biggest layup in the history of debates by saying not condemning white supremacists. I don't know if he didn't hear it, but he's got to clarify that right away. That's like, are you against evil? Why the president didn't just knock it out of the park, I'm not sure.
Not sure.
Maybe we could come up with a few explanations. So first of all, JR, an explanation that he offered up. He just didn't hear it. He didn't hear what the question was, JR. They didn't go back and forth for a full minute about exactly what it is with an ever more carefully defined request to Donald Trump. He didn't hear it. He was confused. Maybe he didn't hear it because he was talking over everybody. But do you think that he just misheard it, that he just misspoke?
Trump wasn't the guy who asked for clarification on the question that was asked that he didn't hear. I'm not sure how you can ask for clarification on a question you didn't hear, Brian. I don't know. So when someone says you're going to condemn white supremacy, and he goes, what name do you want me to, who should I bring up? That means he heard the question if he's asking for clarification on the question, which he then went on to answer further. So go ahead and scrap that, Brian. Number two, Mr. Kilmeade, if to clear up your confusion as to why the president didn't do it, I can't figure it out why he didn't hit this home run out of the park, because he did hit the home run out of the park with the Proud Boys, with the Western white supremacists, because that was the point. He did. It wasn't a softball question for him to answer correctly or answer in a human way. The point was to make sure he continues to keep them motivated to do what they've been doing and violently supportive. That's just all it was. I don't know if Brian Kilmeade doesn't get that or if he's really trying to give some on-the-fly advice. I think that's more what it is. He's definitely trying to give on-the-fly advice because he knows the president watches this show. There's no way he's confused as to whether or not he really condemns or believes the white supremacists are the most horrible people in the country. Because ask the Central Park Five if Donald Trump is a white supremacist. Ask the people that he discriminated against with housing if Donald Trump is a white supremacist. This is all before he came into office. Ask Latinos that he claimed are rapists and murderers and killers driving up in caravans. Ask him if he thinks Donald Trump is a white supremacist. He's told us many times before. Donald Trump doesn't have to tell us again last night because he's told us every time he speaks how much of a white supremacist he is. He told Bob Woodward, hey, yeah, that whole thing about whether or not I empathize with the anger and frustration Black Americans have from the history of racism in our country. No, Bob, you're drinking the Kool-Aid. I don't hear that at all. He said it. He said it, and no one likes to talk about it. He says it over and over and over again. We don't need any more answers as to why he's in support of white supremacy. He's in support of white supremacy because he is one.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And you know, maybe if you're a senior member of the Trump administration, you might say, as we saw last week, I'm not sure that Trump is a deep enough thinker to really grasp white supremacy. He just knows that they support him. Okay, he's an idiot. I get that. Same thing though. He's okay with it. And I understand that Brian Kilmeade, like, his job is to not know why Trump did that, because he can't acknowledge why Trump said what he said. He can't actually expose Fox and Friends viewers to the horrifying truth that the president is okay with what these militias are doing and all of that. It's just sad though. It's sad. You know, I was sort of joking, I guess, in the intro, but they are incredibly important. And this is the sort of propaganda that they spread. They shield Trump's base from having to acknowledge what he is, even while many of them, that's what they like about him. They like that he was more racist than the other Republicans running in 2016, more clearly bigoted than the other Republicans running in 2016, more obviously misogynistic than the other Republicans. They were always going to get someone like that. But the reason they were so jazzed about Trump is he is more unrepentantly awful and cruel and horrific than even the other Republicans. Now,
that's what gets you somewhere in this country.
It does. It does. You know, if you're a commentator and you like that, you'll make tons of money. Absolutely. Far more than JR ever will. If you're a politician, you'll do just fine. Joe Biden did a lot of things in the debate last night that I and other leftists have good cause to be very frustrated by. He went along with Trump's say law and order thing, making a section of the debate about race, about rioting, as if that's the only thing. Just the entire thing is incredibly frustrating. He went along with that. He denounced violence in the protests, even though the vast majority of the protests haven't been violent. So allowing him to frame it like that makes no sense whatsoever. He said he wouldn't fund the police. He said his bill isn't the Green New Deal. He said he's not for Medicare for all. He said that he beat the socialists. He did all of that. So understand that when an opportunity was presented for him to punch the left in the face, he was perfectly willing to do that in almost every area. But there was one area that oddly he didn't take that opportunity, although it was teed up for him and he easily could have done it. Now, I'm not saying that the video I'm about to show you is proof that he'll do these things, but notice that it might be the only area where he didn't take the opportunity that was given to him to attack the left and its goals. So here he is, asked about packing the Supreme Court and ending the filibuster.
So my question to you is, you have refused in the past to talk about it. Are you willing to tell the American people tonight whether or not you will support either ending the filibuster or packing the court?
Whatever position I take in that, that'll become the issue. The issue is the American people should speak. You should go out and vote. You're in voting now. Vote and let your senators know how strongly you feel. Vote now.
Are you gonna pack the
court? Make sure you, in fact, let people know.
He doesn't want to answer the
question. I'm not gonna answer the question.
So look, to the extent that that interaction was talked about at all, it was, hey, Joe Biden evaded it. But not in the context of the things he didn't evade. So why there wouldn't he go on the record saying, well, no, of course I'm not gonna do that. I mean, we have reason to believe that he probably won't, but he refused to actually say that, which I found to be quite interesting, JR. What do you think about that?
Well, because establishment Democrats have also begun to take this approach and or take this as a potential remedy, especially if they get their chance to finish ramming through their candidate that they're looking to subvert, you know, women's rights, civil rights, as many upending of rights in the country as they can do. So, I mean, it's the fact that the establishment has accepted this as a potential possibility allows Joe Biden to do this. I mean, politicians, they work this way. You can be the president of the United States. There's no way that you're making the decision. It just isn't. Like, you may have the final word or a big say in it, but so many other people determine what happens. They're already telling them, hey, so this is a viable option for us. And you can't say you're not going to do it now, because then it's potential. Now, really, the answer is, well, it depends, and it's what you can't say. It depends. Are we going to ram through this justice and go through with their hypocritical game that they've been playing since Obama was in office? If so, yeah, we can play that game too, and we're going to do something about it, because we're looking to protect the American people from a rogue president, a corrupt animal that has taken office and has tried to destroy the country. But that would be a bad soundbite to say, yeah, I'm going to respond to horrible behavior and remedy it. It's really the answer, and honestly, I'd be inspired by that answer, be like, yep, I sure am, because I'm sick of bringing conversations and sticks to a gunfight. This guy is literally setting the country on fire, and we're gonna sit back and say, yeah, I'm not gonna do anything about it. That's the response that we're supposed to give here. And if you don't give that response, you're a bad guy. This is where we are, where the bad guy is the normal guy. So you do bad things. Wait. You mean you're gonna come in here, get elected, and undo the bad things the bad guy did? Come on.
Yeah.
That's the conversation we're having. So when they start getting mad at you for telling the truth, challenge them back and ask them why they want the bad guy to keep winning.
Exactly. 100%. Yeah. And yeah, if people didn't want you to reverse what the bad guy had done, why is Biden leading by so many points? Why do so many millions more Americans want that? It doesn't make any sense. Yeah, look, I'm not ready to like totally be like, oh, he's gonna get rid of the filibuster. I think that the more realistic Explanation is that he doesn't want to send the signal that unfortunately people like Dianne Feinstein and Joe Manchin are perfectly happy to signal, is that, oh no, we're totally gonna surrender and nothing good is ever gonna happen. I think that that's probably most likely, but he could be signaling that he is open to that. And the thing is, look, there are plenty of Democrats that I've been attacking as still believing that it's the 80s and we can just go back to working with them. And certainly Biden has said things like that. He has. And this morning, Nancy Pelosi said, America needs a strong Republican Party. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't at all.
No.
But I also know that Joe Biden has wanted to be president for, 35 years, maybe longer. And I doubt not every Democrat wants to be president to then just sit there and let Mitch McConnell do whatever he wants. Not everyone does. Far too many of them are willing to allow that to be the way that it works. But I don't know, maybe Joe Biden wants to get some things done. Maybe that's why he wants to be president. And maybe he gets that the inherently undemocratic way that our system is set up from top to bottom would hurt his ability to do that. I don't know.
It's a constant game of playing it safe. And again, I get it, because now that's what politics are. Play it safe, don't say the wrong thing. Democrats are worried about that, but everyone else blows it up. And then it's just normal. Like, you have to challenge that entire thought process, because that's where we're sitting in right now.
Yeah. Well, look, I know we've been going on for a long time about the debate. We have one more section. Let's do just a little bit of a wrap up. So coming out of the debate, what effect, if any, is it actually going to have on the election going forward? So we have gone through and we've tried to track down every bit of information about how it might have actually affected people. I understand that the overall effect could probably be accurately described as just nausea. But in terms of the views of the two candidates, so here's a few things you should consider. Republican consultant and pollster Frank Luntz asked a focus group that was watching the debate to use one word to describe the president, and basically, quote, every single word was negative. One respondent from Wisconsin called Trump obnoxious and unpresidential, while a Pennsylvania voter said he behaved like a, quote, crackhead. Others described the president as being un-American and arrogant. In all, from 17 voters in swing states, 15 used negative words, and just 2 used positive words or phrases to describe the president. That is if you consider an ass, but a confident ass, to be a compliment. Otherwise, it's 18-1. So in terms of Biden, responses were things like, I was surprised at how well he did, better than expected, definitely more professional than Trump, and I think he's more of a people person. Competent politician, which I take to be a negative, showed restraint, compassion, politician, predictable, nice guy, but lacking vision, coherent, leader, attentive and rehearsed, somewhat evasive, humanity and integrity, predictable, presidential. So not positive entirely, there were negatives there, but it certainly seems like if it's gonna influence people's opinion about the two candidates, it doesn't look like Trump is gonna come out on top in that, JR.
Yeah, but again, it's never been a situation where he needs to win over the majority of Americans. Because our election system is based on giving more power to the minority of Americans. That's just the way it is. All he has to do is collect a certain small percentage of Americans, and he's got enough in certain areas of the country, in certain parts of the country, and he's got all he needs. You don't have to pay attention to anyone else. So the entire setup of it allows him to say things like, if it weren't for those blue states, we'd be fine with COVID. So if a Democratic presidential candidate comes out and says, if it weren't for those damn red states screwing up the country, we'd be a nice prosperous place right now. Instead, they're over here running around with no teeth and screwing each other's sisters. So if we go all those stupid stereotypes about hicks in the country and call them red states, people's hair will be on fire. Hillary lost 50% of it because she called them deplorables. Donald Trump has called Democratic voters and Democratic representatives far worse, by the way, and to their face. And we just accept it, because it's like, oh yeah, he hates us. And then we move on. Now, if someone says that supporters of a horrible human being are being horrible, that's a political killer. Because we have to cater to the minority of people who are significantly ignorant and refuse to actually see what's happening. So Trump doesn't have to worry about anything else. It's all he has to do. He can push those lines and move on to the next step and yell over someone else. Because the people in this focus group who decided to talk about all these horrible things about him, he doesn't care about. Those people can vote against him. All he needs is that 30% that are too stupid to move on.
Possibly. And certainly I agree. I don't think there are many undecided voters. And honestly, if there are, I wouldn't want to be on an elevator with one. Like, how at this point could you be like, Trump? Someone other than Trump? Not sure how I honestly don't understand that. But I want to play a quick game. It's good news, bad news. And it's going to be in terms of what people at large, not just the focus group, have taken away from this debate. Because we all watched it. And 3 minutes in, you knew that this is not going to be, this is not going to be good. The debate, the election, the rest of America, none of it's going to be good. Okay. But according to CBS News, in I believe this is just in battleground states, who won the debate? 48% say Joe Biden, 41% say Donald Trump, 10% say a tie. So look, that's a win. It's not a dominant win, but it's something. And then on CNN, 60% say that Joe Biden won, 28% say Donald Trump. So a more dominant win. And I'm assuming that it's somewhere in between those. I don't think, obviously, if you are a part of Trump's base, he could have just sat there and explosively, you know, violated his own pants and you would have thought that he won. Like, you're not going to say in a poll that Trump lost. I get that.
Absolutely.
But for those maybe 8% of the country that's still unsure, this might have swayed them. Now, that's the good news. The bad news, though, is JR, get ready for this. In terms of like people looking at these two people, their evaluation of what these people are like. So candidate qualities. Do you believe that this candidate cares about people like you? Joe Biden, 55% say yes. 46% say Donald Trump. They watched that debate and nearly half of the viewers said he cares about me. How could you possibly have come away with that thought? Is he honest and trustworthy? 51% for Joe Biden, 42% for Donald Trump. 42% think that guy's honest and trustworthy. No, I wouldn't trust him to stand alone with that pulpit and not do something dirty to it. I wouldn't trust him as far as I really wish I could throw him. And 42% of the country, JR, thought, yeah, that guy. Yeah, I trust him. I leave my kids with him.
Yeah. Well, the thing is they trust him with the same beliefs that they've got. So as long as it's the baseline. And I hate to keep coming back to it, but once you've locked up the racist vote, there's nothing else to sway them. That's the most important thing to their existence. That's what fuels them, no matter what else happens. You can screw them over financially. You can take away their housing. You can screw them over with taxes. You can do anything you want to them. As long as you keep saying, I hate the same people that you hate, they're like, that's right, that's my guy. It's just the way it is. That's how dug in racism is in our country. I saw when protests happened, there was some memes going around. One of them said, racism is so American that when you challenge it, Americans think that you're challenging America. It was something along those lines, right? So that's just the way it is. It's ingrained. So he's already proven over and over again, and again last night, galvanized it one more time. I'm with you, the racist. Everything else I say doesn't matter. Sexual assault charges that we all saw happening from the last cycle, locker room talk, it's fine, it's whatever. He's still a racist, right? As long as he doesn't denounce racism, as long as he doesn't stop carrying out racist policies, I'm on board, bro. That's all that matters. It's all they care about. So they don't think he's more trustworthy. They don't think he's going to do more for them. All whatever the polling says, they just go, "Oh, I got to vote. I got to take Trump because he's the racist."
Maybe. Okay, really fast. Let's have just a little bit of fun. One more little bit on the debate, and then we're going to move on to other news. Coming out of that ridiculous back and forth that some people are calling a debate, take a look at the ad that Joe Biden released on Twitter today.
President, you would have been much later, Joe.
Mr. President,
Mr. President, you're talking about 2 million people.
You're not
president. We will protect people.
President, I'm the moderator of this debate.
Will you shut up, man? Listen.
I don't know who the baby was that did that crying, but that was some good crying.
There's going to be debate prep and adjustments made. We always see this with presidential debates. The first one happens a certain way, and then things flip around the next time. And a lot of times it could be a complete 180. I think we may get maybe 90% of a shift, not a full 180. But what I hope from Trump's side, I think he's going to be a little more calm, but he's still going to be Trump. But I think from Biden's side, this is the approach you have to take. And this reminded me of that because of that baby crying video. When he asks you a bunch of questions, he floods you with stuff. Ignore him. Or then, I think Jake had a story about this at a bar when he was in his 20s or something. When this guy's all aggressive and coming at you, be like, hey, calm down. Like, you have to be like patronizing. Hey, are you upset? What are you afraid of, Donald? Hey, can you let me finish? I would like to have a conversation, but if you'd like to yell instead and be a child, I'm not sure the many people want that. Don't address any of the things he's saying. Don't say, I'm not going to answer that. Or I did that because he's throwing all this garbage at you. Stop saying, don't let him interrupt you. Or if he does interrupt you, talk about how he's being. He's changing the subject from what you're talking about. Let's change the subject. Why are you so upset, Donald? You sound angry.
Yeah.
Are you afraid? Are you upset because 200,000 Americans have died of COVID under your watch? What's the matter, Donald? Are you upset because you endorse white supremacy and you're trying to come back from that from the last debate? You have to throw everything at him to where he had. We're not going to talk about what you're talking about. We're talking about what I'm going to talk about. Now we're going to really dig into your soul, and he can't take it if somebody starts picking at him like that. Trust me.
Hey, 100%. And look, to some extent, maybe this ad is a version of that. Like, Trump is going to see it, and you know, I don't go in for the whole your interaction with politics should be 100% just hoping that the other side hurts. That's like the entire conservative ideology right now. It's just, I want liberals to feel pain. But if Donald Trump felt some, that'd be okay. And he's going to see that ad. And I don't think he's going to like it. He put up some meme because remember, the right is they're memers. You know, screw policy, screw dealing with the pandemic. They can make some memes. So Trump put up a photo. And it was just, it was supposed to look like a Street Fighter thing or something. And it was him versus Biden and Wallace. Okay. Yeah. No, you were a whiny baby. That's better. That's way better. It's more fun. It's more accurate because I know that your base probably is way more into whatever that was that he did last night. But I really don't think that all of them loved it. I don't think that all of them thought that he came out of it looking great. They didn't like being reminded of Trump's many failures. And for the vast majority of reasonable humans, it was just a pathetic display. And I think that the Biden thing summarized it well, that ad. Some people are speculating that might be that former Bernie staffer. I don't know for sure. Certainly seems like it. It reads that way.
And this, I did want to point that out. When I saw the headlines and stuff on that this morning, they were like, Joe Biden releases an ad making Donald Trump look like a crybaby. I said, Joe Biden had nothing to do with that. It wasn't his idea. No, like, doesn't know what an
Joe
emoji
Biden's like,
is.
I got an idea. I got an idea. Get an emoji. Oh, no, I'm sorry to that. So we used emojis and that we're adults. I know, it's just so like, oh God, how could a man use an emoji? God, they're such whiny babies. You're so weak and you call your weakness strength, and that don't make it so. Donald Trump has spoken badly about insert a group behind closed doors. Honestly, you could just put in any group because behind closed doors, he is speaking negatively about them. We've got the troops and we've got so many people. But the new news coming out of the Atlantic is that he apparently loves to mock religious people, especially evangelicals, behind closed doors. This group that he pretends he cares about and certainly needs the support of. So let me give you a few examples. So one day back in 2015, Donald Trump beckoned Michael Cohen, his longtime confidant and personal attorney, into his office. Trump was brandishing a printout of an article about an Atlanta-based megachurch pastor trying to raise $60 million from his flock to buy a private jet. Trump knew the preacher personally. You remember this guy, Creflo Dollar? I know you remember, Jer, had been among a group of evangelical figures who visited him back in 2011 while he was first exploring a presidential bid. During the meeting, Trump had reverently bowed his head in prayer while the pastors laid hands on him. Now he was gleefully reciting the impious details of Dollar's quest for a Gulfstream G650. They're all hustlers, Trump said. So look, that's one specific insult to call them all hustlers and to point out that clearly they're just trying to rob their supporters of money. But understand that it goes beyond that, despite the fact that he implies that he supports them. So the president's alliance with religious conservatives has long been premised on the contention that he takes them seriously while Democrats hold them in disdain. In speeches and interviews, Trump routinely lavishes praise on conservative Christians, casting himself as their champion. He said, "My administration will never stop fighting for Americans of faith," earlier this year. But in private, according to these reporters, many of Trump's comments about religion are marked by cynicism and contempt, according to people who've worked for him. Former aides told the reporter that they've heard Trump ridicule conservative religious leaders, dismiss various faith groups with cartoonish stereotypes, and deride certain rites and doctrines held sacred by many of the Americans who constitute his base. I don't know who could possibly be surprised by this. He obviously is using these people, and maybe they don't even mind. Maybe they like being used if they get what they want. But this guy doesn't care at all about them, JR. That has been clear for so many years.
He's also not a Christian. We know that too. He can't tell you anything about the Bible that he got from when he grew up in. He always talks like he grew up in Jamaica, Queens or something. And this is the Bible that my mother gave me, an inscription written on the inside that I haven't looked at in 70 years. So, you know, it's again, I think those religious leaders, quote unquote, don't care. They know that he's not. They don't care if he talks bad about them. They don't care that he doesn't believe. They don't care all the stuff that he says, as long as they have their grip. And he's right. So if you say they're all just a bunch of what do you call them? Hucksters
hustlers.
Hustlers, right? They're all a bunch of hustlers. If they heard that, they don't care. They're hustlers. They're looking for money. So they're glumming onto the power in order increase their wealth. It's the same thing that they're doing as far as preaching that they believe in God and that Jesus is the savior. So all that they're saying is, I'll take whatever I can. Creflo Dollar defended another pastor that was caught up in having sex with little boys in his congregation. Many people left that guy's congregation and ended up at Creflo Dollar's church. And Creflo Dollar went off on them, got mad at them and said, you guys are gonna leave him because he had a wreck. He called it a wreck, like a car wreck. He had a wreck and you guys are gonna leave him? I don't want you here. Because he's looking, he's like, that's my friend who's been stealing money from people under the guise of being a religious person for years. I'm the same way, I gotta defend him. I don't wanna take his flock of money. So that's who Creflo Dollar is. You think he cares if Donald Trump calls him a hustler? No, he needs his Gulfstream 650 or whatever the hell it's called. That's what they're concerned about. The same way that racists don't care what he says, religious people who act like they believe Donald Trump is a religious figure don't care either. They're like, he is like, he's useful. He's just like world leaders. Some of these dictatorial world leaders, he's a useful idiot. They're like, this is great.
Yeah.
We can say anything we want to, and we can throw hands on his shoulders while he looks down, and we'll make money. If he says trash, talks trash about us, it's fine. Is the money still coming in? That's the only thing. That's the only objective. Racists only care that he hates everyone else but them. And religious leaders only care that he's helping them make more money. Everything else is just throw it on the pile. Who cares?
Yeah. I'm not going to disagree with any of that. It's totally right. I'm sure they would prefer an actual, a true believer, but if he's giving them, you know, Amy Coney Barrett and she's going to overturn Roe v. Wade or whatever, then I guess they got what they wanted. All of that being said, and it's not going to dispute any of that, let's have fun for just a second. You know what? I want to do a little bit of a throwback. We don't do nearly enough throwbacks. There have been some great videos in the past that we often forget about, but I want to do it here. If you are a Trump supporter and you are a conservative Christian, an evangelical perhaps, and you still believe at this point that Donald Trump believes anything that you believe, I don't understand it. And it should have been clear to you how little he knew about the religion back in 2015 when he had this interaction with a couple of reporters.
Bible, you've been talking about how it's your favorite book. And you said, I think last night in Iowa, some people are surprised that you say that. I'm wondering what one or two of your most favorite Bible verses are. Well, and why.
I wouldn't want to get into it because to me that's very personal. You know, when I talk about the Bible, it's very personal. So I don't want to get into
verse that means a lot to you that you think about or cite.
The Bible means a lot to me, but I don't want to get into specifics.
Even to cite a verse that you like.
No, I don't want to do that.
Old Testament guy or New Testament guy?
Probably equal. I think it's just an incredible, the whole Bible is an incredible. I joke.
He hasn't read the Bible. Look, honestly, we're not going to have a debate about whether he's read the Bible. We can have a debate about whether he made it all the way through the title of the Bible, maybe, but I doubt it even there. That dude doesn't know anything about that. We could play that same game he just played about any long book, you know, Infinite Jest. What's your favorite part? Well, I didn't want to say it's personal. You know, I liked, did you like the beginning? Did you like the end? I liked both equally. I liked both equally. You could say that about anything. He has no idea what is in that book.
I'm looking for the Bible verse because I always forget. My parents are going to be very upset that I don't remember this. But so anyone else who's knows the Bible back and forth, the Bible says the first people thrown into the pits of hell are false prophets, because they're the people who have convinced other normal people who actually believe in the word and scripture and Jesus and God, have taken over his name, God, and made it their own to make money off of, and have stolen people's, you know, their sanity in a way. And we see it over and over again. So if you actually believe in what the Bible says about false prophets, people who act like they believe in God and act like they follow the way of life that has been prophesized, then those are the people that are the worst, because they're organizing enough people to be against the reality of Jesus and God. And these are the types of people that they are. If you actually believe in what you believe in, you would be like, I'm gonna stay away from people who I don't think are really who they say they are. And it's pretty obvious, especially from clips like that of Donald Trump. He's not who he says he is. And the people who see that and continue to support him don't care, because they're not who they say they are either.
Yeah, yeah.
I need it's that Bible verse so badly. Someone please give it to me. I can't believe I can't find it. Anyways, continue.
Maybe someone will put it in the chat. Yeah, it's just he doesn't know anything about it. I am an atheist. I'm a godless atheist, and I can tell you which I like better out of the Old and New Testament. I could do that. I could come up with a verse or something. Like, how could you not even be able to do that? How could you, months into running for president, an old man, not be able to fake it at this point? It's just sad. And again, I guess they don't care. JR was 100% right when he said that. But like, if you're a MAGA head, if you own a red hat and you love the Bible and everything, like, don't you get that I am being so much more respectful of your beliefs when I say that I think they're not based in anything and they're all made up? Like, I'm being honest. Trump believes the exact same thing, but he's lying to you about it. Like, you should prefer the honesty, but you don't. You prefer the comfortable lie from that guy who clearly doesn't know anything about it. Be like, you know what? You've read Lord of the Rings, right? Who's your favorite hobbit? Well, I wouldn't want to say. You know, all the hobbits are good. I wouldn't want to say, you know, which is better. Did you like Gandalf the Grey or Gandalf the White? You know, they both have their advantages. No, that dude didn't read that epic fantasy series. It's obvious. He's spitting in your face. So at last night's debate, Donald Trump talked quite a bit about the pandemic. He obviously was very defensive in the face of the attacks against what he'd done, implying that he'd done a great job, and that any disagreements he had between himself and any other members of the administration, any scientists, is not cause for concern. But is that actually the case? And how do we square some of his comments about things like the timeline for a vaccine with some of what other members of his administration have said? Well, joining us now to break down this and other stories, we have a Democratic strategist and contributor to the Daily Beast, New York Daily News, and the Independent, Max Burns. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. And so first, we want to start with the head of the CDC. So Robert Redfield, he made a lot of news with his comments about masks and about vaccines that Trump almost instantaneously later that day disagreed with, sparking sort of a back and forth between them. Tell me a little bit about what you thought that represented.
Well, it's been a tough week for the president's sort of COVID fantasy land. Almost all of his medical experts have testified in the last week or two under oath to Congress that not only is it unlikely we're going to see a vaccine widespread before Election Day, but that even for months after Election Day, this vaccine's only going to really be available to people who urgently need it, people with pre-existing conditions, the elderly. President Trump, the same day as CDC Director Redfield said that, came out and said, listen, I don't trust my own CDC director. I told him he was wrong, and I don't want him saying that anymore, as if saying that changes the reality on the ground.
Yeah. And so I think for a regular person who is following that news cycle, there is such a big difference between hearing from one person that you're led to believe you can trust, from the head of the CDC, that you might have to wait until next summer, next fall, like seemingly a very long time in the future to get vaccinated against this. versus Trump, who has been repeatedly saying it's coming in literally weeks and the military is ready to start distributing it. I understand that you're saying that it's going to be prioritized for some people, but in terms of anything like a widespread distribution, do we have any real reason to believe that it's one or the other or somewhere in between? Like, what do we actually know at this point?
Right now, we know that there are several vaccine candidates that are in trials with major pharmaceutical companies, but both Dr. Fauci and Dr. Redfield have made clear that even if those are approved as quick as possible, we're looking at summer 2021 before most people are able to get a shot. And even in a best case scenario, there are going to be people who that shot is not responsive for, who for whatever reason, that does not give them an immunity to COVID. And Dr. Redfield said very clearly, wearing a mask is a more certain protection against COVID than getting the COVID vaccine. And that really blows a hole in this idea of the vaccine as the be-all, end-all cure that Donald Trump is selling America.
Yeah, and you know, that was another one of the things that Donald Trump said that he must have misspoke about. And it even came up at the debate with Joe Biden saying that widespread mask use could save many lives by the end of the year, and Trump vigorously disputing that, which is such an odd thing. What I'm curious for you, as you're watching this, you're reporting on these stories, we've been through different cycles of the White House messaging around the pandemic. What is your best guess as to who and to what extent people trust different branches of this response? Is Fauci, who seems to be less of a public face, is he still trusted? What's up with Birx? Is Redfield now tarred by that weird back and forth with the president? Who are the American people largely trusting to get accurate information from?
I think a good measure of who the American people trust is who President Trump has sidelined from doing anything in public. We had Dr. Fauci giving very clear instructions on mask wearing, social distancing. He's gone. Dr. Birx, who was a Trump ally at the time and was even more moderate than Fauci and said, you know, we could maybe reopen if we just socially distance. She's gone too. That wasn't good enough for the reality Trump wanted. The surest test of who we should trust is which medical professionals Donald Trump is telling us to ignore. And we see that when they're under oath before Congress, when they can be penalized with perjury for lying, these doctors will tell you the unvarnished truth, which is that we need to wear a mask, we need to socially distance, and not start thinking that a vaccine is going to be the end of this.
Exactly. Although, you know, I really do believe that he's going to make some sort of big announcement the week of the election or 1 week, you know, right before the election. I wonder how big of a grain of salt the American people, with everything they've seen from the Trump administration, will take that with, and also how the media will cover that. Will they be excited about the possibility of some good news, or will they approach it with the skepticism that's probably warranted considering that back and forth that we've been talking about?
I think when you look at the media, anything goes. I think we're already framing this in mainstream media as, can Trump get a vaccine before Election Day? No, it's literally impossible. Every expert involved in making this vaccine has said it's impossible. For the people, I don't think they're as gullible. If you look at the last two or three polls that have come out from Pew, from the New York Times, a growing majority of Americans don't trust what the president says about COVID. In fact, about 60% say Joe Biden is the person they would trust more to deal with the crisis. So I think the media are, again, much more susceptible to this than regular people.
That's interesting. I would guess that Donald Trump probably does not want the focus of the campaign between now and Election Day, and we're looking at like a little bit more than a month at this point, to really be on the pandemic. That seems like territory he doesn't want to have to defend. What he would probably prefer is some big news story to distract attention away from it. Well, we got that with the passing away, tragically, of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I know that you wrote recently about how this shouldn't serve as a distraction from the pandemic. Well, what do you think about that? And how likely do you think it is that once this is all over, once we've gotten someone probably pushed through, that America will turn back to the pandemic?
I think there's no avoiding it either way. As much as Donald Trump may try to run from this crisis, 204,000 Americans are dead. And Americans saw in the debate last night that the president struggled even to think of that as actual people. He said we should be grateful that those people are, that more of those people are not dead. And despite these efforts to change the topic away from the Supreme Court. It seems the president just can't stop getting in his own way. Every time we get a media story about Amy Coney Barrett or the Senate fight, President Trump will step in front of that story and say something else untrue about COVID. So it may have actually worked to distract people if the president couldn't stop getting in the way of his own messaging.
You know, and I wonder too, like I would guess that if I were Trump and I knew that people, you look at on an issue by issue basis, who do they trust, Trump or Biden? On the pandemic, they seem to be swinging towards Biden. For some reason, I can't conceive of why they'd have a problem with Trump's pandemic response. That I would probably want any random topic as a replacement for that. But I do wonder about this as that topic. We know that that conservatives really do value Supreme Court seats. They might be emboldened by Trump's success if he's able to push someone through. But it also has the very real risk of turning off exactly the sort of people that he doesn't want to and inspiring them to come out and vote against him. How do you think this as a replacement, if it's going to hold the public's attention for a few weeks, does that actually benefit him?
I think as a base play to the 37% of people who are diehard for Trump, this is catnip. This is the best thing he could have gotten to bring them on board. And potentially it could bring a few wavering Republican voters in suburbs back to the party because they want someone who's going to take out Roe versus Wade or the Affordable Care Act. But the numbers are much, much sicklier for the president. The majority of Americans want the next president to make this appointment. And the challenge is if they go ahead and confirm someone before Election Day, they've lost their biggest issue. There's no tension left. You can't say elect Donald Trump again or Joe Biden will make this appointment. And then you literally have nothing to talk about instead of COVID.
Yeah, exactly. And so let's turn then to Biden finally. In terms of the way that he has messaged since Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away, he didn't really seem to want to talk too much about it before the debate. And he made clear, look, that he doesn't support Roe v. Wade being overturned, but it doesn't feel like they're really making it a big centerpiece of the campaign. We noted on the show earlier today that asked about the possibility that he might pack the court or, you know, respond by limiting the filibuster. He actually avoided answering either of those questions. What do you think about the way he's handled this development?
I think the way Biden has handled this is very characteristic Joe Biden. He's not showing his hand on anything he would do with the court if he's elected. And right now, I think Biden recognizes that he's up double digits on Trump when it comes to handling COVID and the economy. But the race is only 2 or 3 points difference when it comes to the Supreme Court. So Biden's absolutely right to focus on the issues he's winning on and to leave this fight to the Senate, who are more than capable of making a great public relations campaign around this and around Republican obstruction in general.
Yeah, we'll certainly have to see if anyone watching this would like more of Max's thoughts on this particular topic that is available at Alternate. You can go read that now. As always, Max Burns, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.